Welcome back to Gulf Coast Live. I'm Mike Canary. Why do some people uproot themselves while others stay put? How does the experience of migration affect the migrants, their societies, and the relationships between sending and receiving states? What is the difference between a refugee and a migrant? And how effective are existing international laws, policies, and organizations that have evolved to assist and protect refugees and migrants? These are some of the questions that will be addressed this Friday evening at Florida Gulf Coast University's next Liebert Lecture called Migrants and Refugees, a Middle East Perspective, presented by the university's Department of Political Science and Public Administration. It features Professor Karen Jacobson. She's the Henry J. Lear Professor in Global Migration at the Fletcher School of Law and Diplomacy at Tufts University in Medford, Massachusetts. Her current research explores urban displacement and global migration systems. She joins us by phone for a preview of Friday night's lecture. Professor Jacobson, welcome to Gulf Coast Live.
Hello, thank you for having me.
And as always, if you would like to add your voice to our discussion, give us a call now. The number is 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. On Facebook, we're at WGCU Public Media. On Twitter, we're at WGCU. Just use the hashtag GCL. So let's start with first principles. Describe for us the difference between migrants and refugees for those who might not be completely clear on that.
Okay, well, basically, migrants or international migrants, let's talk about those. There are about 245 or 250 million international migrants in the world today. Of those, about 24 million are refugees. And refugees are people who have a specific legal designation according to international treaties, refugee treaties and so forth. And they are people who are fleeing persecution or human rights violations or other protection problems in their home countries and have a well-founded fear of persecution and have crossed a border into another country. And from in that country, they are going to request asylum. And if they're given asylum or they're regarded as refugees, in effect, they have a different set of rights and obligations and have a different legal context than other kinds of migrants. So other kinds of migrants might be, for example, people who come for work or people who come to join their families or people who seek education or health care and so forth. And they're in a very different legal category from people who are fleeing persecution and conflict like refugees are.
Are there international laws that are uniformly applied when it comes to how people or how countries, that is, treat refugees and people who are seeking asylum?
Yeah, we have one of the most powerful treaties, international treaties, that have been in place since 1951 is the 1951 Refugee Convention, which the U.S. and many other countries signed back in 1950 after the Second World War. And most countries in the world have signed on to and ratified that convention and its protocol, which fixed some of the problems in it, the 1967 protocol. This treaty is the basis for many domestic and national laws. Each country having signed on to a treaty, each country must formulate its own domestic laws. And every country that has signed on has its own set of laws, including the U.S., And so these domestic laws are usually in accordance with the treaty, and the domestic laws set out how countries should treat and should treat refugees and what kind of rights they should give them and how they're going to admit them for asylum or not. So those laws are carefully set out, and they're in line, for the most part, with the International Refugee Convention.
So there are 24 million or so refugees in the world today. Where are they mostly, and where have they come from?
Well, today, they come from all over. The largest refugee population in the world today would be the Syrians, mm-hmm. who began leaving Syria when the war got going in about 2012. And most of those Syrian refugees, as is the case with most refugees, most of the refugees flee to neighboring countries. So most of the Syrian refugees in the world today are in Turkey. About 3.5 million Syrians are in Turkey. And the other surrounding countries, like Lebanon, has about 1 million refugees. Jordan has about 800,000. Iraq has about 400,000. And then further out in the region, countries like Egypt, and further afield, but still close to Syria, those countries take most of the world's 7 or so million refugees. So most of, there are several other major crises that maybe people have heard about that are producing refugees today. One is the crisis in Myanmar, where Rohingya refugees are fled into Bangladesh. There are about 900,000 Rohingya in Bangladesh. And another case would be South Sudan. About 900,000 refugees have fled South Sudan to Uganda. So most of the world's refugees are living in the countries bordering their country of origin. It's relatively few refugees who make it as far as Europe or the U.S.
If there are international laws that sort of outline how refugees are to be treated, does it have anything to say about how many refugees a country must take?
No, it does not have anything to say. That decision is made by each individual country.
Gotcha.
In our own country, in the U.S., that decision is made by the president, who sets a quota every year of how many refugees and asylum seekers should come into the U.S. And that quota is the ceiling, is the maximum amount of people, of refugees and asylum seekers will come into the U.S. As many of your guests probably know, that quota was for years up around 60 or 70,000 refugees. But since the Trump administration came into power, that number, that quota has been reduced to about 30,000 refugees. But in fact, that ceiling is not met. For the last few years, that ceiling has not been met. So even though we technically could have 25 to 30,000 refugees come into the country every year, we have not had that many come.
Is that because of bureaucratic reasons, or what would be the reasoning behind that? If it seems like we're in one of the worst times when it comes globally to the number of refugees that are out there.
Yeah, well, one reason is that one of the difficulties of coming to the U.S. as a refugee is you have to get through a very substantial 2 years worth, in some cases, series of screening tests that ensure that you're not going to be a threat to the U.S., that you're in decent health, that you are going to be a good fit, but primarily that you're not going to pose any kind of security problems for the U.S. So that screening, which is even longer for people from some countries, but that screening can really set back the whole process of resettlement. From when a person is initially chosen, usually by, say, the UN Refugee Agency, as someone who should be resettled for protection reasons, from that moment until their appearance at the airport can be, many years. And the more screening and difficulties of getting into a country that are put in place, the longer that process will take. It's a complicated process that takes place mostly in the countries where refugees are rather than here. But it means that there's a lot of people who are not making it over here.
So the screening process, if somebody was a refugee from Syria who was chosen by the UN or whoever that agency was to be an asylum seeker, where does the screening happen, or what is the agency or organization that does that screening? Does it all take place there overseas, or can you walk us through that?
So, okay, the people who are being resettled over here to the U.S., who are coming as refugees to be resettled here, they are not asylum seekers. They already have become refugees.
Okay.
Asylum seeker is someone who's seeking asylum. Those are the people on our southern border, the people seeking asylum, seeking to become accepted as a refugee. The people who are resettled here would be, let's take Syrians. Those people go through this hefty screening process over there. It's happening in the refugee camps, in the cities where refugees are living. It's the process. I mean, no refugee comes near the U.S. until they have been thoroughly vetted. And as you also might know, is that in December 2017, the presidential proclamation one of President Trump's proclamations was to restrict entry into the U.S. for nationals from certain countries, right? The countries that were deemed security threats. So this was the travel ban, right?
Mm-hmm.
And this meant that people from these countries, of which Syria was one, were not permitted to come into the country, or only under very exceptional circumstances. So that means we've had very few people from these countries come into the U.S. in the last couple of years. So even if you do go through these screening process, you're still not going to be coming to the U.S. because of the travel ban. But for other refugees, most of our refugees in the U.S. are from countries like the Congo or Myanmar or Ukraine or Bhutan or Eritrea. Those refugees also go through this screening, but again, it happens out in the regions where they are living, not in the U.S.
What is their status here in the United States if they have made it through all the way through that screening process and they do show up at our airport or however you described it? I mean, what is next for them here?
Right. So what happens is they make it through the screening process, and then IOM, the International Organization of Migration, helps them, brings them over to the U.S. on a flight to the U.S., and they're met at the U.S. at the airport by one of their resettlement agencies. We have 9 major voluntary agencies here in the U.S. who are responsible for helping people who come to the U.S. And they are met and greeted and taken to their various, where they've been assigned to live. And then they have, you know, they have 9 months of assistance from the U.S., from federal assistance. And after that, they're expected to manage for themselves, and to, you know, they're treated as migrants to the U.S. I mean, one way in which the U.S. has good refugee policy is that people who are admitted to the U.S. as refugees are here as on a permanent basis. It's a path to citizenship. They've been fully vetted. They're recognized as needing protection, and they are admitted to the U.S., helped a little bit to gain their feet and to become settled, and then they're on their own, and then within 5 years, like other permanent legal residents, they're eligible for citizenship. So this is a really good aspect of U.S.'s refugee policy, and it's been in place for a long time and has worked really well and helped thousands, millions of people.
Hmm. If you're just tuning in, I'm talking to Professor Karen Jacobson from the Fletcher School of Law and Diplomacy at Tufts University in Massachusetts about her upcoming lecture at Florida Gulf Coast University called Migrants and Refugees, A Middle East Perspective. It's this Friday evening at 6 p.m. in Edwards Hall here on the FGCU campus. We have a few minutes left. If you'd like to weigh in on our conversation, give us a call now. The number is 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. Can you characterize how bad or not bad the current global refugee situation is as compared to the past, even, you know, the recent past and even the deeper past?
Yeah. Well, we are now at of that number we mentioned earlier, about 25 or so million refugees. 5 million of those or so are Palestinian refugees, have been refugees for a very long time. The rest, about 20 or so million refugees, mostly living in countries near their country of origin, that number, 20 million, is not the first time we've hit that number. If you go back to around about the year, you know, the early 1990s to about the mid-1990s, this was a period of time when there were massive refugee flows on the same magnitude as our current. So, and these refugees were fleeing the war in Yugoslavia.
Mm-hmm.
Which displaced many, many millions of refugees into Europe. And then a few years later, we had some serious problems in the Horn and Central Africa. So we had the genocide in Rwanda in 1994, and then the Somalia was sort of blowing up in the early 90s, and so we had massive outflows then. So in around about the early mid-90s, we had numbers of the same magnitude. Then things kind of calmed down a little bit. That is, refugee flows went down to about 10 million around about from about 2000 to 2006 or so, around there. And then they've been edging up ever since. And one of the main reasons, of course, is the war in Syria, which has really added to our refugee population, global refugee population, a lot. But, you know, it's not the first time we've seen this many refugees. and I'm sure it won't be the last, and if things calm down in Syria, if there is return, these are big ifs, we will probably see a reduction in refugees in the next few years.
Would you expect probably it to be going down if you had to predict the trend line in going into the future, or do you think it's possible that it could get worse before it gets better?
Yeah, well, what I think is that, you know, overall, if you look at displacement in the world generally, refugees are a part of it, right? Most of the world's people who are displaced by conflict or violence or, environmental problems or livelihood destruction, those people are what we are internally displaced. They don't leave their countries. They're called internally displaced people or IDPs. And there are far more of those people than there are refugees. We don't really have a good number, but it's probably on the order of 40 or so million people are displaced within their own countries. Some of those people leave their countries and become refugees. Many of them don't have the resources to leave and are stuck where they are. Whether you can predict there will be a push of that a new conflict or a new emergency will break out and push people across the border, it certainly happens. And, of course, as our population goes up all the time, that means more and more people are affected when that happens. So if I had to bet, I would say probably the numbers are not going to have come down substantially, but hopefully they'll come down somewhat, and they hopefully will be sustainable and positive return movements as they have been in the past, too.
So for the Syrian refugees who are in Turkey or in the other countries that you said that they are right now, the 7 or so million of them, if those countries said, well, you have to go home, what would be, you know, that's like a rock and a hard place, it seems like, right now with what's going on in Syria. How would that play out?
That is a very important question because we are facing that issue now. As the war seems to wind down, or it seems to at least turn into more patchy parts of Syria, there is pressure on refugees now, in both in Lebanon and parts of Jordan and Turkey and elsewhere. There's pressure on them from governments and also from civil society for people to return home. However, it's very much the case that Syria is not a safe place. It is not a safe place to return to yet. It may become that way if the government decides to view returnees more positively. That's a long shot. But right now, not only is Syria itself a very violent place, but it's likely that people who are returning from Syria could well face a renewed persecution by the Assad regime because they fled, and because they were on the wrong side when they fled. They maybe have been in a rebel-held area, and they may be viewed as enemies to Assad. So when people go back, it's not at all the case that in Syria right now that they are going back to a safe place. Even if the war is not there, they may still be facing persecution of some sort. So many of us in the field are really hoping that countries like Lebanon and Jordan will not push refugees back across the border, push them back into Syria prematurely before it's safe for them to return. Even though we recognize that Lebanon and Jordan and Turkey and other places really struggle to support such large numbers of refugees. These countries are not rich by any means. Lebanon has many of its own problems and is supporting, you know, of a small country of a population of about 5 million, supporting 1 million refugees. This is not easy for Lebanon, and we recognize that, but we hope it doesn't act prematurely by pushing them back.
All right. Well, that is all the time we have. Do you have any final thoughts before we say goodbye?
I thank you for having me. I really hope that people will come and listen and learn more about the situation, because we're in it's a very dynamic situation in Syria now and could go either way. So let's hope for the best.
All right. Well, thank you for your time. That is all the time we have for today's show. Thanks to my guest. Karen Jacobson is the Henry J. Lear Professor in Global Migration at the Fletcher School of Law and Diplomacy at Tufts University. Professor Jacobson, thanks for your time and insights.
Thank you so much.
Her lecture, Migrants and Refugees, A Middle East Perspective, is this Friday evening at 6 p.m. in Edwards Hall here on the FGCU campus. You can find a link with more information on our website, gulfcoastlive.org. And thanks to my earlier guests, or our earlier guests, Jennifer Watson-Roberts from Eco America and Yoka Arditi Rocha from the Clio Institute during our segment about changing attitudes toward climate change. If you joined our show today in progress and would like to hear it in its entirety, tune in tonight at 9 after Travel with Rick Steves to hear the re-air, or you can always always hear all of our episodes in full on our website, gulfcoastlive.org, or you can subscribe to the Gulf Coast Live podcast on iTunes, NPR One, Podbean, or wherever you get your podcasts. Our show today was produced by Julie Glenn and myself. Our director is Richard Chin Kui. Our social media coordinator is Tara Callaghan. Gulf Coast Live is made possible through the generous support of the Elizabeth B. McGraw Foundation. For now, thanks for listening. I'm Mike Canary. This is WGCU-FM Fort Myers 90.1, WMKO Marco Island 91.7 FM, NPR for Southwest Florida.